Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Portlandia. This is Positively Revolting. I'm Lynn, and I'm here with
Lonnie. I'm Ani.
And we've got a show about what's been going on, which is so much.
It's true. There's been a whole lot. So this is, look at this.
What's going on? We're beyond occupation now, I think. We're traveling. I heard Jonathan Nichols on Democracy Now! This morning saying, we have gone, we're gone past, fine, you don't want us in the park, we'll just go everywhere.
There you are.
So
this is your Occupy Portland update via Positively Revolting, where it's 6 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. And we hope you're doing well. We're waking up. And we have with us at least one guest. We have with us XL Bell. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And we hope to have by phone Carrie Koch from PCASC, also working with Occupy.
Known as Portland Central American Solidarity Committee.
Thanks for not letting me slip by with acronym. That's good. And hopefully, you too, dear listeners, will join us during the conversation as we discuss the events of this last week and the movement overall, where we're going, and, how we can take part in history, basically. So let's just sort of jump straight into it from there. Thanks for joining us again, XL. Let's start with sort of a recap of this week. We had just the most amazing sort of ups, downs, and sidewayses over the last 7 days. Starting with last Friday, there was the press conference, Mayor Adams's press conference. I guess that was Thursday, wasn't it? Stating that the park was going to be closed at 12:01 on Saturday, and sort of the response from there. If you could maybe go over that briefly.
There was a lot of, a little bit of chaos. There was, us trying to figure out what we're going to do. There was an emergency GA held. I believe it was.
And
that
GAs, for our listeners who have been under a rock for the last couple of months, is the General Assembly.
There was an emergency GA held, General Assembly held, I think it was on Friday. It was on Friday at noon, and there was a lot of good conversation. Having our butts under the fire definitely helped with getting some stuff done and really coming together. So we basically decided that we'd move out a lot of our valuables, but ultimately the consensus was that we would defend the park. So at around 7, we had another GA broke into different working groups, and we were planning all kinds of fun actions for Saturday night. Including, a potluck and, festive music and, just a general festive environment, cleanup, et cetera, et cetera.
And then Saturday happened and thousands of people came to support. It was, I have to say, I was there. In the interest of full disclosure for our listeners, I've been very involved. I think most of our listeners probably already know that. So I can speak as a witness for part of this. My veneer of journalism is kind of out the window. But it was amazing. Thousands of people came to support.
Yeah.
And it was a very festive environment, which I was just thrilled with. I mean, go Portland. That's what I have to say. I heard estimates of 10,000 people. I was going for about a 6,000 to 7,000 person turnout by my own estimation.
Same for me.
Yeah, it was blocks of supporters just swelling, into the parks, onto the sidewalks, into the streets, because really there was not enough space to contain people. It was just an amazing turnout. And so Saturday night progressed. Carry on, XL.
Oh, sure. Thousands of people came down. We, actually took an offensive, and instead of allowing ourselves to be boxed into the park, actually went out into the street. And it's actually kind of amazing, this collective mindset. We make decisions that everyone's comfortable with, and as soon as everyone is comfortable with it, you just see people doing it. People, follow through with their decisions or with what they're comfortable with based on their actions. So we took Main Street, after the police tried to, mounted police tried to cut through the crowd, we basically pushed off the the riot, the mounted police, and then pushed back the riot cops until we also had taken third. Then we eventually barricaded Main Street such that we could march up third and take Madison. And we did that and partied in the street until around 5:30, 6 a.m. And at that point, we thought it was pretty safe. You know, the police basically requested that we exit the street.
And when did the parks open?
The parks open at 5.
Yeah, okay.
But we waited until around 6 because right. we didn't want any fishy action going on mm-hmm. with the
police. Well, and the police, actually, at that point, I heard the police announce over their loudspeakers that we needed to clear the street immediately and please go back to the park.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, considering the park was where we wanted to be in the first place, yeah, that seemed like a good idea. So people did. And... but again, that was about...
So how many folks do you think were left at that hour?
Well, see, now here's the trick. That was about 6 in the morning, mm-hmm. right? So thousands of people came out, you know, 10, 11. Actually, I would have to say the numbers peaked about 11, between 11 and 1 in the morning. Mm-hmm. I believe we had consistently over 6,000 people. Now, after 1 in the morning, some people kind of get tired, cold, hungry. There's a surreal lack of bathrooms, should you ever need to use one. And you just happen
Especially
to be
thousands.
Out and about downtown
yeah.
at, say, 2 in the morning and the bars have closed already, so you can't just sneak into a bar. So, you know, there were certain things, I believe, calling people away. And so you get to 2 o'clock and you get to 3 o'clock, and I think we were down to maybe a couple thousand people by 3. By 6 o'clock, certainly still around a couple thousand, maybe 1,500, something like that. But then you get an announcement, go back to the park, clear the street, and folks do, and then the cops leave. Well, blessed relief, right? Now we can go catch some Z's, get some breakfast, use a bathroom. And I remember at the time, actually, several people around me started messaging their friends and calling their friends saying, hey, we've been out here since 10 o'clock last night. We need to leave. Other people need to come out here because as soon as numbers drop, things could go badly. And I don't know. So I left. And as did most people around 6, 6:30 in the morning. And shortly after, things went badly. I don't really know how many people were around at 9, 9:30 when the cops came back to clear the park.
And unfortunately, I was in the medic training, so I was not there
right.
at that time.
But estimates were like 400 or 500, something
yeah,
like
it
that.
Yeah, it was probably right around 400 or 500 people. There was a consistent occupation level of right, you know, somewhere in the 300 or 400 range. So, right. And I, like many people, have been suffering this sort of upper respiratory laryngitis thing pretty much ever since then. Something about that 24-hour blowout of all adrenaline. Anyways, that's when the cops came back. Parks were cleared. And things started going, you know, up until that time, people were very congratulatory of our ability to work with the police, the police's ability, and the city's ability for us all to cooperate together. But things started very much souring on Sunday. With the clearing of the camp that was at a sort of a surprise time, and people being rather badly treated at that point. XL, do you want to add in to this?
I might just add, I had something to add, but I don't remember actually.
Okay. We'll move on because
it's early.
I mean, things have been just rocking. I think people were afraid that, oh no, you know, the camp's been busted. Things are going to be, we're very much on an emergency sort of trajectory. And we were afraid, I think some of us were afraid of momentum being lost, but that certainly hasn't happened. Back to Sunday then?
Yeah, well, yeah, actually, I just wanted to add that, you know, I feel like, you know, there's been a lot of criticism, or at least initially, based on the media portrayal of what happened. There was a lot of criticism around, you know, us not cleaning up the parks enough. And, you know, I just wanted to add that there were a lot of individuals that were out there cleaning up, including myself, throughout the weekend and on Sunday when it was raided, when the park was raided. So I do want to express a certain amount of frustration with a lot of our comrades' equipment being thrown away, being bulldozed and just dumped. It is very much like what happened in New York, just mm-hmm. not, you know, we already had taken out all the valuables, so at least that was something we had on our side.
Wasn't quite as much a surprise. What I noticed is how the synchronicity of all the occupation sites being disrupted at pretty much the same time. And I believe that the mayor of Oakland slipped in a little press conference saying that they'd all been on a conference call with Homeland Security. I was not there, but so this is secondhand. People saw Homeland Security vehicles, big trucks to put people in down in downtown Portland. I just found that interesting that all the camps were cleared pretty much at this. I mean, they started with Oakland. People in Oakland came back, but you know, first Portland, then New York.
Yeah, there and
it's been going since then. I'm trying to look this up on the Lord Google.
Yeah, there's been actually quite a lot of speculation around the level of cooperation at a regional and federal level, considering how very similar the strikes have been, and considering the words that the mayors and police chiefs have used.
Sam Adams was like, "It's just not safe," and it reminded me of a 4-year-old child who had been caught in a lie. That's just my opinion. It's not fact. It's just not, like, he was stamping his foot, going, "It's just not safe." That's it. And of course, tell that to the folks who are houseless, who are actually having a safe place to stay for the first time in a long time.
Right. I think that's
and
a very
like
important
the occupation
point.
Movement made the houseless people. And the people who should be getting treatment for illnesses, mental and physical, I think not.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's really great is that, you know, those relationships still exist. I think it's going to be
That's really good to hear.
It's going to be a little while before we have our infrastructure back in place to really help support those people. But they are a part of our movement, and they have continued to participate, even though they have to find a new place to sleep every night, and they're hungry. You know, that they are dedicated, and they deserve a lot more than I think what the city has given them thus far. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I hope that we will be able to support them in, you know, mm-hmm. in their efforts.
That's part of what this is all about, isn't it, XL?
Absolutely.
It's 8:18. You're listening to KBOO. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ani. And it's the weekly update.
That is pretty much what we've been doing for this last month, isn't it, Lynn?
Yes, and continue to do. And what I would love is for folks who have had experiences with this last week to please give us a call at 503-231-8187. It's a talk radio show. Let us know what's been going on with you. I'd like to, you know, this is you're the community. We're a community radio station. This is the community. So let us know how you feel and what's going on.
So I want to fast forward from the things going very, very badly on Sunday, not to gloss over that, but I think that there's been a lot of coverage on those events. and to sort of move forward into, we didn't lose momentum, in fact, as a movement. There have been
au contraire, actually.
And there were actions planned well before the encampment was dispersed or evicted that have been continuing on. The PSU student walkout, which happened on Wednesday, yesterday's actions against the banks, and those are both things that I'd love to unpack a little bit and talk about. I know that you were a part of yesterday's actions. Were you also around on Wednesday for the PSU walkout?
Unfortunately, I wasn't. Unfortunately, I wasn't at the walkout itself. I was at doing various other things in the city.
Yes.
So I unfortunately can't talk to that.
It has been, like I said, a very busy week with actions and actions on top of actions. So let's go ahead and move on to yesterday, and to just note that there was a student walkout on Wednesday, where a general assembly was modeled, where students held their own general assembly to address their grievances, and and so it spreads, and so it continues, and then yesterday's N17 day of action against the banks. This started out; it was in collaboration with a lot of labor support. And labor unions working together with occupiers on the steel bridge
at
8 o'clock
yes.
Yesterday morning. Let's go ahead and start with that.
Yeah, so I was on the Steel Bridge and was there for the entirety of that. And I think it was amazing seeing so many people come out so early in the morning. People from all walks of life, definitely the union supporting that action brought in a lot of, you know, different union folk, older individuals, people that you just don't normally see at the camps, or you wouldn't have seen at the camps, for example, on a daily basis. And not to say they weren't down there, just not in mass in the way right. that, you know, the Steel Bridge action brought people down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Rumors was out there with their coffee, their mobile coffee station, which is amazing. They were, you know, there throughout the entire day, and I wanted to just shout out to them. I love them. You know, we had maybe around 20 individuals decide to engage in civil disobedience. The cops had blocked off the Steel Bridge kind of ironically to traffic so that we couldn't cross it because of safety, quote unquote, safety concerns.
There's that word again. You know, that is the most loaded word these days. As they said in The Princess Bride, as one character said, I don't think it means what he think it means. You know?
Well, there's that. It's, and also, I just always love the irony of the cops close the streets so we don't have to.
Yeah.
I've seen this so many times.
Well, don't.
Right?
It's so easy.
Okay, we'll get to that in a moment. I've got so much to say on that. But let's go ahead and flash forward. So we have so many people on the Steel Bridge, 8 o'clock yesterday morning. We have labor activists, we have occupiers, we have students, we have just a number of people who are there to make the point of, go ahead. And that point was?
I mean, the Steel Bridge action in particular was trying to point out, you know, not only all the issues that Occupy is trying to bring awareness to, bring light to, you know, including, you know, the fact that we are, you know, the 99%, we are the working class, we are, you know, the people united, and we have that power. But also, you know, pointing out, you know, wealth inequities and you know, other you know, issues that are around, that surround corporate power. But the main Steel Bridge action was trying to point out the fact that our government is spending money, so much money on the military, so much money elsewhere, and is spending the money, in their opinion, incorrectly. Instead, they could be investing in infrastructure. The Steel Bridge, there's a rating for structural integrity, and it only gets a 30 out of 100. So that's the point of, as far as I understood from the organizers and the way that they were talking mm-hmm. to me about it, that was the point, was to point out that we could be investing in infrastructure, necessary infrastructure change, instead of investing in war or investing in police. There's a lot of focus on the fact that so many police were deployed. There were at least two, I don't know what to call them, brigades of riot police. And additionally, and then the line that was in front of
one
us.
One or two per demonstrator really isn't necessary.
You think?
Yeah. That's what I'm just thinking.
It's something. And let's go ahead. Let's take a caller, and we'll get back to the narrative of yesterday, because things just kept unfolding throughout the day. There were, I think, 40, over 40 arrests by the end of the day. And we'll get into.
I have to say, this is the first time I've done research by looking on Twitter feeds. The first time. I'm like, woohoo!
I have to say, that's been my experience this last month.
Thank you, I was so excited. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. I started twitting at the beginning of the occupation. Okay. I knew something would get me to do it. So, yes, let's go ahead and talk to Beth. Good morning, Beth. You're on the air. As our engineers.
Hello?
Yes. Good morning, Beth. You're on the air?
Yeah, I can barely hear you. This morning I heard on the news, and then I'll tell you what my involvement's been. This morning I heard the most bizarre thing the mayor said, that they could not, because of these protesters, they could not answer a rape call-in of a woman who'd been raped, and she had to wait 3 hours because they couldn't send one policeman to.
Well, they couldn't, or they didn't,
give me
Beth.
A break.
Right. Yeah. Couldn't,
you know,
or didn't.
They've called in every county, the police from counties all over the state, and they can't send one person, you know, to take the report of this rape. I mean,
this is exactly
blocking the street.
Yeah,
they're breaking the law. They're hurting people, putting them in the hospital. They're doing absolutely everything they're accusing the protesters of. They're doing.
Thanks very much for making that point. Thanks.
Anyway, I'm 66. I have trouble walking. Big trouble.
Right.
And so I've been making posters like crazy. My boss has been down there the whole time. And she's giving clothing, food, people that are getting sick and or need a shower, she's had them come back to the office to clean up.
Awesome.
We are so, my boss is so great. Anyway.
Awesome. Well, thank you,
Beth. I just wanted to mention the mayor's just full of it. I mean, I can't believe these things he's saying. And when you watch the no news on the television, which elderly
absolutely.
People,
you know what, Beth?
I
so appreciate your comments. We have like a gazillion people on the lines that are wanting to tell their story. So thank you so much.
And I think that point is very important. It's not the that we don't have police resources to go elsewhere. It's that we're choosing to use them in bizarre ways and then spin it hard. So that's a little bit more something I want to talk about in a few. And good morning, Jean. You're on the air.
Yes. I've been participating in the demonstrations.
Thank you.
And I really
for your service.
I resent Captain Reese. I feel that he is turning Portland into a police state, and I think the riot police are totally unnecessary, and he's deliberately building an atmosphere of fear and intimidation to those people who maybe have never protested but are unhappy with the state of affairs, and he's deliberately building a climate of fear and intimidation to keep people from even getting out there and exercising their rights. First Amendment rights, and also I think it's wrong to have horses. I think it's animal abuse and it's dangerous. And yesterday, we were yelling shame, shame at something was going on, and there was a man, you know, a policeman, and he had this long camera, and he was just taking all of our pictures. We were doing nothing wrong. We were just standing there yelling shame, and he was taking our pictures, and that's intimidation too. So my point is just that I think that Mayor Adams and the captain are deliberately using fear and intimidation to get people to not even begin to get out in the street. And that your listeners, you know, if you support us, honking the horn isn't really enough. I think at this point, people need to just get, who's never protested before, get out there to say that you're not willing to let your city become a police state, because that is what's happening.
Thank you so
much. Thank you very much.
And you know, I believe that Reese, the rumors I was reading that people are trying to pull him out to run for mayor.
Yes, in fact, he is running.
Is he actually
mayor.
Running?
He is. yeah. What do you think about that, Portland? Police chiefs and mayors. We've had those before. If anyone remembers Ivan C. See, I'm a Portland girl. I've lived here my whole life. Police chiefs and mayors don't mix very well, is my experience. And also, as a Portland girl who's been here my whole life, what we're seeing is a return to traditional Portland tactics. There was like a little, I don't know, what do you want to call that? It was like this perestroika. It was like this moment of glasnost. It was a thawing of relationships with cops. Honestly, because there haven't been really any street actions to speak of in the last few years. I mean, not massive, not, you know, there have been permitted demonstrations where everyone is very careful to stay within guidelines of permits. And there have been very small, I held up the very small sign next to the microphone just so you could have a better idea of how small, street actions have been in the last few years. But for folks that were, you know, active through the 90s, certainly under Chief Moose, and in the early 2000s under Croker, we well know rubber bullets, projectiles, chemical weapons, truncheons, We know that stuff. They've used those before. Right. My friends have had their arms broken before, a couple of them, in the middle of demonstrations because, oh, look at that. They got pushed off a sidewalk and into the street, and now they're in the street, and now the cops can break their arm. It's amazing how these things work, especially when they're pushed off sidewalks by cops, which we saw again yesterday. There was a return to that tactic. There's a great video clip, actually, of a cop shoving a woman off a sidewalk with his bicycle. And that's, again, very disturbing that this is intimidation and harassment. I think there are reasons why we haven't seen this level of street action in a while because, yeah, that got really intense in the early 2000s. And then people kind of stopped. And I have to say there was the whole spin of if you're doing that, you're with the terrorists. And, yeah. You know, now we're kind of over, I'm hoping. That kind of fear mongering and realizing that there are serious, serious problems that must be addressed within our society. And the only way to do that, as history has shown us, is with direct action and with mass direct action, mass awareness, and actually nonviolently, which is a hugely important principle of the Occupy movement. All actions with Occupy are based in nonviolence. So just to get on that point one more time, a fellow used to volunteer here, Steve. Steve Casper was a great news reporter for a while. Now, he went back to work and he doesn't have time to volunteer so much. But I told him I was going to quote him. He wrote last night that he found that there are now thousands of people in Portland who would rather be beaten, gassed, and arrested than continue to be ignored, insulted, and impoverished.
Well put.
Man, he's got away with words.
Well, let's go back to the phone. What do you say?
All right, let's do that.
So I think Conch is on the line.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, yes. I was part of the bike swarm yesterday, which was fun and also helpful, at least according to the friendly motorists we encountered.
Bike swarms are always helpful.
Because we're keeping the streets and intersections open. There would be lines of riot police that would be shouting and announcing that everybody needs to stay on the sidewalks, and then they would stand in these big lines and block the streets and intersections. And the bike swarm would just line up where they're supposed to be in the vehicular lane and just wait for, you know, their opportunity to proceed. And finally, after a while, the cops would direct them around into another lane, and then they'd come around again, and the cops would say, okay, and they'd just get off the intersection finally, and then traffic would flow. Overall, I would say that from what I observed, there would be really no difference in what happened downtown yesterday if there were no cops and between there being hundreds of cops, because essentially the banks got closed down, no damage got done except for maybe a sign or two being taped in the windows, and they actually got closed down without, I think the first couple banks in the morning had people inside. Like 5 or 10 people inside, and then after that, they didn't, because all the banks just closed up as soon as they saw people coming, and the only thing the cops did was make a larger mass of people, which prevented customers from getting into the bank.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for your observations.
So the bike swarm has been an interesting feature, I guess, yesterday as well as on Saturday night when they sort of served that same function, bicycling for hours. I was wondering how many miles those bicyclists wrapped up it going around two blocks for 6-7 hours tirelessly, with their little bells and smiles. And I love the bike swarm.
So, Excel, a listener types into us that they wanted to ask your opinion of the role of Homeland Security at Occupy.
My experience is limited on that, but I think that the main role of Homeland Security has been when they wanted to clear Terry Schronk Plaza. They did hire or ask for city assistance to do that, but it was Homeland Security pulling the shots. Since Terry Schronk was occupied, there has been a constant presence of at least one Homeland Security vehicle, SUV, that was constantly, circling around the camps. So I'm not really sure what their role has been, definitely been present.
Did they fill any of the... when people were arrested, did they get taken with them, or do you know?
I don't think so. The initially, are you talking about on Thursday? On the like tomorrow,
any day,
yesterday?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that. I did see people getting put into a TriMet bus because there are too many people to get that are getting arrested. I haven't seen giant Homeland Security vans. I've only seen city vans, and there was that big van with the two audio speakers on top of it that they pull up anytime they want to announce that they're all going to get arrested if you stay in the street. But no, I haven't seen any.
Okay.
Identified,
right.
Homeland Security fans.
That's always a different story. It is 8:35. This is KBOO. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. We, Ani and I, are here with XL this morning, and he's been involved in what has been going on with the Occupy movement, which there are still no leaders. I'm very proud to hear that. If you have questions for XL, and it looks like we've got still a bunch of callers. Francis would be next. What do you say, XL? Should we listen to Francis?
Absolutely.
Francis, what have you got to say?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm the mother of a couple of young people who are involved in Occupy, and they are amazed at what has happened in my lifetime, the things that have happened in our country's history. But what one of them is concerned, and I don't hear it today either. We get wrapped up in the discussion of the actions and the responses to the actions, but not why the actions are taking place, the goal of the actions. When there's group actions like this, there's supposed to be a goal, mm-hmm. an objective, what we want to see happen.
Absolutely.
And I know one person is saying that, you know, all of the grievances are legitimate. There needs to be an umbrella goal that kind of covers all of those.
Well,
it seems to be that corporations are not people. And until our country recognizes that and does not afford corporations the rights of people, these things that we are grieving are going to continue to happen. So if there could be more discussion about what we want to mm-hmm. see as a result of our group actions, why we are occupying Wall Street, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it is because these corporations are given the rights of people, and that allows them to do the nefarious things they do with no accountability. You know, if a person did such things
yeah.
as what happened in the Gulf of Mexico, the negligent homicide that happened in the Gulf of Mexico, they would be in prison. Corporation cannot be put in prison.
Right.
Okay. Now, the people in prison, I mean, if we want to say corporations are people, then the people in prison should be afforded the same 14th Amendment protection as corporations have right now.
I think you've got a great point there. I can't remember who it was that said that they'll believe a corporation is a person when Rick Perry executes one.
It can't happen. And corporations don't have a conscience.
Mm-hmm.
The conscience of a corporation
and they're immortal.
Is short-term profit. That's
right.
The conscience. Corporation.
All right. So, thanks very
anyway,
much for your call, Francis.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I did have a response to that. I think that absolutely, I agree. We do need to focus, I think, equally on why we're there. I mean, probably more even so, why we're there, just as much as the action itself. However, I do think that the action itself empowers people and brings community together and shows that we are willing to stand up for these, for our discontentment around the corruption in our politics and the corporate power. And so I do think that there is a relationship, right? So we want to empower people. We want to talk about these actions, and we want to talk about police repression, because I think that police repression points towards who they work for and what values are instilled in that governmental system, what order really means. So I definitely agree. Community rights, for example, and instilling community rights over corporate rights or over corporate power is something that we hopefully will continue to work on. And thank you for your input.
And you know, everything sort of naturally dovetails. The other thing, I mean, as an old person, I was around in '68 when things started blowing up before, and what has happened to every movement that I've seen is it gets coerced into being a singular like the anti-war movement was not just about anti-war when it started, but that's what it ended up. The anti-nukes movement did not start out just as an anti-nuclear movement, but it got coerced and got channeled a lot by the media into one thing, because it's one reason, as I heard someone say, if there are no leaders, you can't arrest them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't kill them, as what happened in the civil rights movement that was huge, or with someone like Bobby Kennedy. So you can't, that's why it's really one of the really important things about, and that a lot of folks that are used to a hierarchical way of doing things are very upset and feel very uneasy about the quote, and I've got, I'm not going to do the air quotes.
You just did.
I just did, I know. The leaderless, then it's not that, because every one of these issues all dovetail beautifully together. Mm-hmm. And people are saying, but nothing's happening. Do you know how many people switched bank accounts? I am a member of OnPoint. I was in there Monday, and I heard all the folks talking about that they had to stay open. This was Guy Fawkes Day, so that was a couple Mondays ago, I guess, that people changed. They had to stay open an hour later because so many people were changing their... The vice president of the bank came down to open accounts for people. Now, what that does is take fees away, of course, from the big... And also puts more money into the local economy because the local credit unions will be giving loans to people. I was just reading last night that a very well-known 104-year-old institution in Portland, a restaurant that's down on 2nd and Ankeny, is closing because the guy can't get a loan. They're going under because they can't get a loan. And yet, banks are bailed out. This is being addressed, I believe, by the Occupy movement. Big time.
All of these things.
All of
these so much
things.
More.
Yes, yes.
I think
but
it
they
is,
totally dovetail.
It is. The issues... Many issues are the same issue. You know, we had a saying many years ago, all struggle is the same struggle. And when we look at the movement towards justice, really, they do interrelate. When you look at corporate personhood and the corruption that the obscene disparity in wealth has brought to not only our country, but in the globalization of the economy around the world. We find that these issues are at the roots of human rights violations, are at the roots of environmental devastation, you know, are at the roots of misery around the world. So that is why we occupy. It's really one issue, and it's 1,000 issues all at the same time. So we got about 18 minutes left in the program this morning. We have people to talk to. We have things to say. We're looking forward into the future, what's happening with the movement here locally, at least into the next while. How
and the
people
future
can
of the radio station this
can
morning.
Plug in.
And the future of KBOO this morning on air.
Look, look at Lynn going for the segue. That was excellent.
Thank you.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, 9 o'clock Veterans Voice features part 2, Women on War, a panel discussion initially broadcast in the early 90s. Carolyn Mills interviews women who have been affected by war. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia is off today. We'll hear from Flashpoints with reports from yesterday's Day of Action in New York, Portland, Los Angeles, and more. At 11 o'clock, Carlos Chavez hosts a special program on Pachuco culture with Geraldo Lalo Licon, professor of Latin studies at University of Wisconsin. Many people recognize the Pachucos are the so-called Zoot Suiters, but the Zoot Suit was only a part of this unique and somewhat buried history of and cultural identity. Thanks very much to all KBOO members for your support. After all, you are the way we exist. 84% of our funding comes directly from you, our grassroots. If you're not a member yet, you can rectify the situation immediately by going to kboo.fm and clicking the tip jar in the upper right corner. Support your independent radio station now, because you know we need each other. Okay, that's my two cents. Shall we, where shall we go, Lynn? Do you want to take another call?
Do I think we need to. Folks,
all right, do that.
On.
Cynthia, good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, KBOO. I was there yesterday as an observer, and I really saw a lot of wonderful people. And they weren't antagonizing the priest. There were a few, and I'd like to kind of speak to that a little bit. But generally, the it was so incredibly peaceful, and I hope that we stay there, and I hope that the emphasis really is concentrated on Gandhi, you know, the message, and not the we are us against them when it comes to the police. So I wanted to say that, but also I wanted to talk about a video that I saw on YouTube that was, I think it was created on the day after they raided, or the morning of the when they raided, and they were right at the police line, this individual with a camera, and the person had the camera right in the policeman's face, and he was demanding to see the badges. And I just wanted to say that I think that that's just so incredibly aggressive, and if we have an issue with individual policemen, that we take it to the city or to the into the police department, because I think it creates incredible aggression.
Okay, I hear you on that, but let me go ahead and offer you another perspective. As somebody, again, who's been organizing in Portland since I was 14, it's 1980, cops have the responsibility, have the obligation, are supposed to, by law, give you their identification when asked.
Right. This is for our protection, exactly.
This is just a part of our basic civil liberties. It's about acting professionally. I cannot tell you how many times cops do not comply with that ordinance. I have seen it with my own eyes in the last 2 weeks. I saw it over and over again at the Jameson Square incident events a few weeks ago. And it's a little maddening to be unarmed, to be exercising one's civil liberties, to be acting nonviolently, and to have somebody who is heavily armed
not
comply with a most basic in civil request. And at some point, yeah, your tempers can flare. That's not so good. I would always prefer people to stay calm. But, you know, in fact, the cops are obligated. And it's not like, wow, that's kind of nice if they comply with that. No, that's essential, because that's how we know who, in fact, just took out the baton and is cracking someone on
right,
the head.
Exactly. I understand
okay,
that.
Okay, it's important.
Yes, totally important. I agree.
And so I want to, again, sort of look at the aggression of somebody yelling, give me your ID number, versus the aggression of somebody having a baton, having a canister of pepper gas, and, you know, having leaded bags of projectiles.
I really love to see the movement continue
sure.
in the vein.
It has every intention, as far as I know. XL?
Peace. You know, and I think that that we need to open up the communications again with the city and the police department. I think that's crucial.
So I wanted to, you know, just maybe give an experience that I had last night. I think that, you know, the relationship between the movement and the police is not antagonistic at all. And you said that, you know, most people were compliant, peaceful, et cetera.
Yeah.
And that's still true. You know, even the people that may get their tempers flared up, you know, we re-emphasize over and over again. Last night there was a little meeting. It wasn't a general assembly. It was just a meeting where we had a discussion and we addressed police officers that were present. And we were, you know, addressing the fact that love is our weapon, or love is what we have. And, you know, we want to, like, reach out our hand to the police. I myself made a quote or was talking about an experience I had where the police were telling me that, you know, this movement in Portland is pitiful and it's disorganized and you're an embarrassment to the Wall Street movement. And I addressed that. I addressed that in front of the police officers, out loud, in public, and I said, look, this is what was said to me. Remember that love is what we have to give. Love is love. There's only two things. That's what Piper said. There's only two things in this world. There's love and there's fear. But what I said after that, after addressing that was said, I said, you know, I don't think that every police officer has this opinion, but I think that he himself is addressing what he did and why I think he did it. He himself is trying to justify his repression towards us. He himself is trying to justify his. And I'm sure I think that you saw this. He himself is trying to justify his use of force against us.
Right, and that's why we need to stay incredibly peaceful.
Absolutely. But then mm-hmm. addressing those issues and being straightforward about it, saying, this is what you did. I don't think every police officer has done this, but I do welcome, I want police officers and people outside of the movement and people inside of the movement to think about the motivation for their actions. And that to be something that you do as an individual. So definitely, I agree that we should remain calm mm-hmm. and we should try to remain as peaceful as possible. And I think that's the greatest, that shows the greatest amount of discipline that we can possibly have. But at the same time, we should hold those individual police officers accountable. We shouldn't have to go to the city or to the police bureau to have an individual police officer make the decision to do the right thing.
I understand that, but when there's an escalating situation, when it's right on the front line mm-hmm. and those cops, they're there day in, every March, they're broken down, they're exhausted, and maybe these were not cops from here, maybe they were from Vancouver or Beaverton or wherever, but it's just when it's in a tense situation, I think it's really important that we really stay calm, and that's just all I have to say.
Thank you so much for saying it, Cynthia. Thanks for calling in. Remaining peaceful, remaining calm, even in the height of tension, is crucial. It is important. That is, in fact, how we, I think, remain a movement. We are based in nonviolence. That is key. We have Steve. We have Steve no longer. We have Robert, and then we just have a few minutes to talk about upcoming actions and where we're going from here. Good morning, Robert.
On this subject, I'm really tickled to see an anarchist movement show what real democracy is by not calling itself an anarchist movement, and it's just pretty funny because everybody wants to put it in a pigeonhole, put it in a box. And, one of the things about not picking leaders doesn't give them a target to go after, to arrest or kill. It also doesn't give them somebody to dump buckets of money on,
mm-hmm.
And sway their opinions that way. And mm-hmm. in regard to the last caller and the police, realize that, police don't become police for that paycheck. Anybody that's taken a psychology course understands why people do what they do and why they become what they become. And, most of the police officers, I've got to say, are there for the power. It has nothing to do with paycheck. Well, it is a paycheck, but let's be honest. Killers like to look the part. Tough guys like to look the part. There's a reason they're all dressed in battle gear now and ready to make riots. I just think that reporting their egregious actions to the authorities goes a lot further when they're on YouTube and when they're on other,
That's something I got to say. I love the fact that, every person, maybe a tenth of the people don't have a way of physically recording actions going on all around them. This has changed phenomenally over the years, and it's awesome. It helps the message spread in a way that listening to each other really never has. Because, you could be blowing that out of the water. Sure, you were upset, whatever. No, when you have the pictures and you have the videos of what happens, it's very compelling.
I had a friend take a serious beat down in front of me. Now, he did say some things that were fresh to the officer that did it. This was in another state. And this officer beat him to the ground and started kicking him. And I walked up and said, "Give me your badge number." And he turned to me and said, "Do you want some too?" And I reaffirmed, "No, I want your badge number." And it completely deflated him. Now, this wasn't a riot cop. This was, we were out in the boonies being disorderly and whatnot. But there was no violence required, And as soon as I asked for his badge number, he pulled out his card and gave it to me. He apologized to my friend, and then he proceeded to explain all of the circumstances which make him a human being that is on the edge. And he was going through a divorce. He was living with his mother for the first time in over 20 years. He was going through a lot.
Right.
And, you know, it put both of us on the same level. It put everybody there on the same level, where he was just another person also.
Right.
And that's important. That's an important tool. Asking for their card, even yelling for their card, or wielding a camera is all nonviolent. And it's all there just to protect the individual.
Hey, thanks very much for your call this morning.
Have a wonderful day, ladies.
You too. So, coming up for the Occupy movement, where are we going, Axel?
That's a really broad
thousands
question.
And thousands and millions.
And you've got 3 minutes to kill us.
Oh, gosh. I am completely uninformed on future actions. The Action Committee met yesterday, and they probably were talking about it, although I was only there briefly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's some exciting things going on, as far as I hear. We'll find out. As far as, you know, where the Portland movement is going, I mean, I think that this eviction was actually quite a blessing. We, you know, for being dispersed and not having a centralized location, we are equally as visible. Like, we are clearly visible yesterday, all day yesterday. It was, we had so much visibility inside and outside of banks.
Visibility has not suffered.
but being dispersed has lended us some excellent opportunities to you know, grow closer to one another, as we did create, you know, some preliminary relationships, and definitely some relationships between, you know, different tribes, and, you know, their, you know, I guess some tribes have leaders, so their leaders, and I think that those relationships have continued to exist and continue to grow, mainly because, you know, everyone has to come together. We're less comfortable when we're dispersed. We have more likelihood of getting hyperthermia. We have more likelihood of being cold, of being lonely, you know, or splitting apart from our relationships that we had so become so used to, you know, constantly being around.
Yeah.
So I think that it actually has created a lot more cohesion, ironically. Because we are able to group together and really work on what we desire to be working on, rather than thinking about how we all want to live together. That's still something we're thinking about. We're still thinking about, you know, when and if we want to create a new camp, making sure that people that don't have the luxury of waiting or of delaying on the camp have a place to stay, and have the resources that they need to continue working in the movement. I think that there are a lot of interesting opportunities for us to decentralize the movement, and definitely we have been talking about having, you know, centralized location, and then, you know, different, mobile camps, and I think that's probably what's going to end up happening. That's a general consensus.
Sounds smart.
And we have tonight, there is a spokes council at 7 o'clock on... Every other night, things alternate between a spokes council and a general assembly at this point, with Thursdays being neither, but a big cultural night of celebration. Should we get to a Thursday where we have a great celebration moment, it'll be a wonderful thing. But tonight is spokes council, and I hear it's at the First Congregational Church downtown, 1126 Southwest Park. You can get this information at the OccupyPortland.org. OccupyPortland.org website. There is a link to a calendar off of the homepage. Just scroll around, check it out. There's a calendar with all manner of things going on. And got to say that the next action I personally know about, there's a couple on Saturday. There is the March
That's right.
for Universal Healthcare
right.
that is meeting at noon at Southwest Salmon and NATO Parkway. That's Saturday, noon, Southwest Salmon and NATO Parkway, March for Universal Healthcare, as 42 million Americans don't have insurance. The other thing will be a neighborhood discussion, moving Occupy to the neighborhoods, as Axel was just saying, with sort of the movable occupation, occupying Colonel Summers Park. That'll be this Saturday, starting at 5 p.m., Saturday the 19th. Colonel Summers Park, that's 20th and Belmont, 17th and Taylor, and all the blocks in between.
And
We're out of time.
We're out of time, but follow us these days. We're on Twitter.
Check that out.
Positively Revolt on Twitter.
Actually, positive. Positive Revolt.
Positive Revolt. Revolt on Twitter. Thank you so much, Portland.
Magdalene is trembling like a washing on a line. Trembling and bleeding. Never before was a man so kind. Never so redeeming. Enter the multitude. Sleep.